supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we have an intriguing and timely question for you towards the end of the show. What can you do if there is a bright light shining into your garden at night that seems to be attracting tons of insect pests, but it's a light that you don't control? We will offer a variety of options when we get to the question of the week. In the meantime, though, it is a huge number of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Linda, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how are you?
I am just ducky today. Linda, how are you doing?
I'm great.
And where is Linda great?
Well, right now I'm in Harleysville, PA, actually helping second graders plant some onions and things like that.
Okay, good. And is that what this is about?
No, this is about, we have a garden at the shore in North Cape May. And for the past few years, we've had something called Septoria. It's a fungus that gets on our tomatoes and it starts killing them kind of from the bottom. They get, the leaves start falling off the bottom first. And I've tried everything. And I just didn't know if you had a, you know, some kind of a remedy for that or something that could help them be more resistant to it.
Okay, so you're growing down the shore. Are you down the shore the whole summer?
Yes.
Okay. Raised beds or flat earth?
Well, both. We've tried both.
Okay. Are you growing your tomatoes in the same areas year after year?
Well, I've moved them around to try to see if, and then I put them in, some I put in buckets, and I moved them to the other side of the yard, and they still got it.
You're saying the bottom leaves turn yellow, and the yellowing progresses up the plant.
The plant, and then they get spots on them.
Oh, okay.
And I read about it, and it just, everything that I've read, it looks like it's this fungus called Septoria.
Yeah. Well, that does cause leaf spotting. But the initial symptoms sound to me more like verticillium wilt, which is caused by, you know, you've been growing tomatoes in the same spots year after year too often.
Okay.
So how do you feed your tomatoes?
I've been doing, Miracle Grower, like a plant food, and we fertilize around them with organic fertilizer. And then for that wilt or whatever that fungus is, I've been using like this copper powder that you put on it, but it didn't seem to do a whole lot.
Okay.
Some Miracle Grow on some of the plants.
Okay. I would stop using the chemical fertilizer. That increases the odds of these diseases being attracted to your plants.
Okay.
What kind of garden do you have? I mean, you say you raised bed, flat earth. What kind of tomatoes are you growing? How do you support them? How much room is in between them?
Well, we've tried different ones, not too successfully in the past couple of years because they all get this, except there are a couple of varieties that seemed, a plum that seemed more resistant to it.
Okay.
So this year we bought some tomatoes from Rutgers that were supposed to be some new tomato or
yes,
it was reintroduced maybe.
Now, how do you grow them? Do you cage them? Do you stake them? How much room is in between them?
Yeah, we cage them and we stake them also. And then the ones in the buckets, there's a lot of room between them. And then this year we tried growing them in bags of soil, big bags.
How can you support a tomato growing out of a bag of soil?
Well, he made the stake pointed and he put it down through into the dirt.
Okay, so you're trying to tie the tomatoes to a stake.
Right.
Here's what I'm going to suggest. Maybe plant fewer tomatoes. I want you to make sure that where you put your tomatoes, no tomato grew the previous year.
Okay.
Make sure they get morning sun. How much sun does the whole garden get?
Well, basically the whole garden gets all morning sun and then some afternoon, but it not total afternoon sun.
Oh, okay. But it does get 6 to 8 hours of sun a day.
Yeah.
Starting in the morning.
Yeah.
I want you to go out and get a high-quality compost, not composted manure, real compost made with fall leaves. Mm-hmm. You can buy nice, high-quality bagged composts out there. What I want you to do is make sure your tomatoes are planted in different places. I want you to make sure they're planted where they're going to get morning sun. The only mulch that's going to be around them is compost.
Okay.
No more chemical plant food. And if you see plants developing spots, if you see leaves developing spots, just pull those spots off right away. Throw them in a plastic bag and close it up.
Okay.
Because if you leave spotted leaves on the plant, that'll spread it to the rest of the plant. You also may not water by wetting the leaves of the plant. If you're using a sprinkler or a hose, that causes the leaf spots. Pull off any affected leaves as soon as you see them. I think you'll do a lot better.
All right. I'm going to try all that, and I will let you know.
All right. Good luck.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Craig, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. I need you to help me referee a bit of a dispute with the wife about how to handle cleaning up a skunk or raccoon problem we have. I heard your wonderful call last week about beneficial nematodes, and I have that booked to be done in August. I'm outside of Ottawa, Canada, and it's quite cold. I just got a frost warning the other day. So they tell me that we can't put the beneficial nematodes into the soil until August because they will die before then, and it isn't the right time of the cycle. I have a fairly large backyard, about 60 feet by about 150 to 180 feet. And I would say about 25% of that area has been completely devastated from either skunks or raccoons ripping them up, trying to get to these grubs. And I'm trying to figure out how do I fix it now and bring it back. I want to bring in the big guns. I want to bring in a rototiller and rip up
the area. All right. First, nematodes, beneficial nematodes will only work in warm soil. Beneficial nematodes, there are species that are very good at going after beetle grubs, grubs of the Japanese and June beetle, and they can also work on flea larvae on the surface of the soil. Have you seen any mammals doing this to your lawn?
No. The next morning, I see another area has been conquered.
Now, do you have a lot of skunks in the area? Do you see a lot of them on the road at mating?
Yes.
Okay.
I go for walks at night and have to avoid them often.
Oh, okay. So you think it's skunks?
I think it's skunks. A neighbor thinks it's raccoons.
Well, raccoons really aren't very good at working for their dinner like skunks. Skunks, as they cross across a lawn, if they sense beetle grubs or earthworms, especially earthworms are their favorite food, or cicada larvae, they will dig up to get at that food. Now, have you had a lot of Japanese beetle problems?
I don't think so, no. See, I do see many worms in my garden, but not
okay, so
beetles.
That's what's going on here, Craig. The skunks, which I'm pretty sure you're correct, their damage is pretty specific, and they love earthworms. You have a lot of earthworms. You got a lot of skunks. So that makes sense. So forget your plan.
Okay.
So the first thing you're going to do is go around to your local garden centers and try to find a mole and vole repellent that is made with castor oil.
Okay.
You want to make your soil smell bad to the skunks when they dig into it. Look around. Get the ones with the highest concentration of castor oil and spread those all over your land. And then, because you live up in the far north, you can't install a lawn at this time of year. You know that. You have to wait until August. So spread the castor oil products now to see if you can limit the damage. And then in August, yes, rototill up what you have, put in the cool season grass of your choice. Make sure you level it, add some organic matter to it. Maybe even aerate your lawn to help it drain better, to move the earthworms down lower in the soil. And after you seed the lawn, put down more of the castor oil repellent. And then get a motion-activated sprinkler and use it whenever your temperatures are above freezing. It will chase away skunks just as well as any other creature. But if you scent the soil with castor oil, and then the only safe time to replant your lawn is in the late summer, but before you do that, give it a good core aeration. That's a machine that pulls plugs out of the soil.
That sounds great. I have taken notes. I thank you very much. You sound like you've gotten far better advice than I've gotten before.
Yeah, that wasn't a hard contest, Greg. All right, man. Good luck to you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will appear on Saturday, June 26th at the Burlington County, New Jersey Earth Fair, giving a talk on pests, weeds, and disease, how to keep your garden growing naturally. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with suggestions when a bright light is increasing your pest problems and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating 140 years of introducing unique new varieties and providing treasured heirlooms, hardworking hybrids, live plants, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. More at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, does a bright light over your garden increase your pest problems? You betcha it does. What happens when you can't shut the light? We'll give you some surprisingly helpful options when we get to the question of the week. In the meantime, lots of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Amanda, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being had, Amanda. Where are you?
I'm in Lincoln in England.
I kind of know England. I spent a lot of time in England in the 70s doing almost all of rural England and London and Wales. So where exactly are you?
We are on the East Coast, and we are about an hour and a bit south of York and about 40 minutes from Nottingham, sort of in between the two cities. So very beautiful part of the country.
Quite
flat.
I loved my time in Nottingham. I had never imagined there was really a sheriff's castle. I'd started out in London, so I'd been to the British Museum, and I think Nottingham Castle is a better British Museum than the British Museum. The stuff was so much cooler.
Yeah, lots of history there. Very, very interesting.
Well, oddly enough, we have a lot of podcast listeners in England, which is a great honor for me because I know the gardening tradition over there is incredibly enthusiastic. So, a couple of people may hear about you.
Right, lovely.
So what can we possibly do for you today?
Well, my question was, basically, I searched for some information to help me with my potatoes. I have been gardening vegetables for quite a few years, but just doing little tasters here and there, trying things. And I love my potatoes fresh from the soil straight into the pot. It's wonderful. But last year, with other commitments and family issues, I wasn't able to actually dig up all my potatoes. And they've been growing through this year, my volunteer potatoes. And I didn't know whether they were edible, and two, whether I can put new stock in with the old volunteer potatoes.
Oh, okay, good. No, you know, even if you pay attention, even if you think you have dug up all of your potatoes from one season, you're almost always going to get volunteers popping up, you know, because it's like a prison break underground sometimes, I think. You got this big cluster around the roots of the plant, but then you find these ones like the Great Escape who have migrated over a foot or two. And I went through a period where either they liked to roam or I was a poor picker, but I never had to plant potatoes again. I always had enough coming up in these random areas in my garden. And there's only one circumstance where that is wrong. And that is if your garden suffered any form of late blight the previous season. Now, you're familiar with late blight, right?
I've heard of it. I'm not actually familiar with what it is.
Late blight is the disease that sent millions of my ancestors to the United States. It's the same pathogen that caused the Great Famine in Ireland.
Ireland, yeah.
And it crosses over to tomatoes. So,
and or tomatoes, as we call them.
Right, but the symptoms are not subtle. The plant just dies and turns black. It's incredibly dramatic. And then the above ground part of the plant is very dangerous because it's loaded with spores. So we had an outbreak of late blight on tomatoes in the United States about 5 years ago. And the advice was to actually go out to your garden with a garbage bag, put the garbage bag over top of the dead plant, turn it all upside down, tie it up, and then leave it out in the sun even for a few days before you put it into the trash to try to control the spores. But the spores don't survive winter above ground. The only way the spores can survive is on infected potatoes underground. So if your potatoes looked normal, then there is absolutely no reason to disturb your volunteer potatoes.
Lovely. I mean, I've had a slight yellowing in the leaves, but I believe that might be because we've recently, the last couple of weeks, had a couple of late frosts overnight. So I don't know whether the frost got to the leaves and sort of sent them a bit of a yellowy color. But apart from that, they all look quite healthy.
Oh, yeah. And believe me, late blight, it's not something on a dial like you have to tell the difference between 3 or 4. It's a switch between dead and alive. You can tell late blight. You know, and any discolored leaves on plants like potatoes, just pull them off right away, just in case there is a little bit of disease there, but also to make you look like a better gardener to your friends.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. It's so great to hear from one of our friends in the UK.
That was lovely talking to you.
Have a great season.
And you. Thank you for your help.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Allison, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Allison. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. How are you?
I am just ducky, thank you. Where is Allison hanging?
I live in Elkins Park, right outside of Philadelphia.
Okay, very good. What can we do for Allison in Elkins Park?
I have an invasion of caterpillars on the side of my house. They started with just a couple, and now my stone wall up my driveway has hundreds of caterpillars, and it's freaking me out. I called an exterminator to see if I could get some help, and the exterminator actually said, you don't need to do anything, that the caterpillars were on a migratory path, and they picked my driveway to make their way to the next destination, and that within a week they should be gone. Well, it's 3 days since I talked to the exterminator, and they're still there, and I don't know what to do.
Now, what do the caterpillars look like?
They have a white stripe down the middle, and they're about 2 inches long.
And they're just hanging out on the wall of your home?
They're on the stone wall of the home, but they're also on the step. They're in the driveway. They are on some of the plants that I have along the ground, which is what I was afraid of. I thought maybe they would kill the ground cover. I have hostas. I have perennials that are there.
And you didn't have like caterpillars in your trees last year or anything like that? You didn't have fall webworms or tent caterpillars?
Well, I have a driveway that I share with another neighbor, and there are trees on her side of the property, and she takes care of her trees, and I don't know what may have occurred. I haven't asked her what went on last year.
Okay, and are they eating your plants?
I don't think so. I don't know if I could tell at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I agree with your exterminator. It sounds like this is just a great migration and they're passing through. If they're in a spot where you're stepping on them, just get out your garden hose and set it for high pressure and just blow them off that area. If you want to have some fun, you can spray them off the side of your house, but they're would be no reason to spray your home with pesticide that you'd be inhaling all season long. My advice to you is essentially leave them alone. Use your hose to spray them off any areas that you don't want them on. But, you know, this could really increase your bird population.
Because I have more food, huh?
Yes. Yes, there are people who buy mealworms and things like this to put out for their birds at this time of year. So I would do nothing. I would let birds feed on them. I would let them move along. And then if they start eating any of your plants, you can spray those plants with BT, which is an all-natural caterpillar control that kills caterpillars that eat the sprayed leaves. But you could spray it all over a caterpillar and it wouldn't harm it because it's not eating anything. You have to wait until they start chomping on a plant, spray the plant, and then the BT would wipe them out. But, I mean, this just sounds like a film crew passing through town.
All right. Do you think I should set up a side business and sell the caterpillars?
Yeah, absolutely. To fishermen for bait.
All right. Okay, well, thank you. I won't be crazy because who likes invasion of the caterpillars, right?
Right. Now, if they come in and they start changing the channel on your TV, that's a different story.
Yeah. All righty. Thanks, Mike.
Good luck, Allison.
Thank you.
1-888-346-9499. Martha, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you. I am delighted to be speaking with you, marvelous Mike McGrath, and I'm hoping you can help me restore and revive those 70-year-old fig trees.
Okay. Where are you, Marvelous Martha?
The fig trees are in northeast Texas, sandy soil, near the town of New Boston, near the town of Texarkana, tippy top.
It's not exactly fig territory, is it?
Well, my father got a lot of attention for his fig orchard. He would be written up about once a decade for his abilities. And they have always done well in my lifetime. They would grow big and tall and strong and produce tons of figs, and then they would have setbacks, you know, weather, drought, freezes, and they would always come back. But Papa's gone now, so I don't remember everything he told me to do. There originally were about, 25 bearing fig trees. And now there's only six. And I killed two of them by foolishly draining the pool, which we use a salt instead of chlorine kind of things. And I sort of didn't think about that, and I had drained the pool to water, and that didn't work.
Yeah, you're guilty.
I am. So of the six remaining, the one is still very hardy, but the others have a lot of dead wood and some sprouts on the dead wood. And then there's also two of them have saplings emerging from the ground, from the roots.
Okay.
So I can remember Papa cutting them back hard after a freeze damage, and I don't know if that's what I should do or how to feed them. Gave them a light dust of nitrogen a few years ago.
That was a mistake.
And then we also have a pecan orchard, so after the pecans are hulled, mechanically shelled, I used and Papa did too, use the pecan shells as mulch around what would be sort of the drip line of the trees.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent mulch. That's a very valuable mulch in your part of the country. Okay, so here's the deal. Right now, you've got a lot of new growth on the living figs, right?
Yes.
Okay, so now is the perfect time to get out and remove all of the dead wood.
Okay.
Now, you can be very aggressive here, because the God's honest truth is you can cut a fig back to the ground and it's going to re-sprout.
Yeah, that's what Papa did, yeah.
But you don't need to do that, although with your long summer, you could also get away with it. But what I want you to do now is I want you to remove all of the dead wood. And then if it seems like the plant is really crowded, you can thin out some other branches, but leave a good amount of green growth behind. In your climate, you could get two crops of figs a season.
Yes, that has happened in the past. Yes.
Yeah. And then keep them mulched. Do not feed them. Figs do not like to be fed. The only thing your figs need is a little bit of water during dry times. And you would do that by, can you drag a hose over?
Oh, yes. And we do rainwater as well. So.
Oh, good. Good. Rainwater is the best down where you are.
Indeed, indeed.
But just some bottom irrigation, and then at the end of the season, because your part of Texas is in this very southern region, your plants don't need winter protection. You often go some winters without a freeze, right?
No, there's usually at least a few days of below 32. But this is the upper area of Region 8,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
Your
now,
trees.
When you advise me to cut out all the dead wood, what do I do with those limbs that appear to be mostly dead but have, you know, enthusiastic new little branches with bright green leaves coming off of them?
If you want, you can take those enthusiastic little branches and put them in a big pot of moist potting soil.
And heal them in. Okay.
And turn them into their own trees.
Oh, bless you. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Why did, well, Papa would have told me that, so thank you.
Yeah. So just in the spring, when we get to this time of year, cut out any dead or damaged wood from the winter, and then just enjoy them, keep them mulched, keep them watered during dry times.
Okay.
You don't need to protect them in the winter. Do not prune them in the fall or in the winter. Just prune them that once a year in the spring. Even if there's no winter damage, a light pruning will encourage more fig growth in the spring. And you can root those puppies like crazy right now. Anything like that that you even you cut off accidentally, you can turn it into a new tree and then plant that new tree someplace else in the fall. You might make up for all your
The errors of my wife.
Yeah.
The saltwater damage, yes.
But you're in a good climate for figs. You should do fine. Figs like to root. They are the easiest plant to root. So you got a lot of wiggle room there. And
You have just made my day. Thank you.
Yeah, you'll soon have more figs than you know what to do with.
Oh, I will be sending them to you by overnight express.
All right. We'll be waiting. We'll make some Fig Newtons.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Good luck, Marth.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and thank everybody who pushed the YouTube views of my TED Talk on composting over 500,000 recently. And to the trolls, well, seriously, people, get over yourselves. Get a life. But don't you go channeling William Shatner just yet, because we'll be right back with what to do when a bright light is bringing hungry bugs to your garden and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating 140 years of introducing unique new varieties and providing treasured heirlooms, hardworking hybrids, live plants, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. More at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we will provide some answers as to what you can do when a bright light is shining in your garden. You can't shut the light, and moths and destructive insects are coming to your crops. We'll tell you how to handle that precarious situation after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Lee, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being had, Lee. Where are you?
I am in Fishtown in Philadelphia.
All right, Fishtown, one of the most popular neighborhoods in Philly these days, man.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. All right, what can we do for Lee in Fishtown?
I have pests pilfering my peppers.
Okay.
And pretty much anything I grow. I have squirrels, and I've heard a million different remedies. I've heard rubber snakes from the dollar store. I've heard orange peels. I've heard sticking plastic forks in your soil, and they'll take a pepper, they'll take one bite, and they'll leave it, and they'll run away.
Right, because squirrels don't actually like to eat your garden produce. They like to take a single bite out of everything because they know it'll drive you crazy.
Yeah, I noticed.
Squirrels are evil. Squirrels have too much time on their hands. It only takes a squirrel about 90 seconds a day to attend to all its earthly needs. The rest of their waking hours are spent trying to drive gardeners crazy.
Yeah. So what secrets do you have? Anything you'd recommend? Because I've heard a million different ones and nothing seems to work.
Well, first of all, you're not feeding squirrels. You're not feeding bird seed. And are any of your neighbors putting out squirrel food or bird seed?
No. Not that I know of, no.
Okay. So what I rely on in my garden is a motion-activated sprinkler. This is something you can buy them for like $60. The best one out there is called the Scarecrow. You attach it to your garden hose. You put a 9-volt battery in the head of the thing. It's got an impact sprinkler on top. You turn your hose on full blast, point it at the area you wish to protect, and then nothing happens until a squirrel or a dog or a cat comes in range of the beam. And then all of a sudden, the sprinkler goes off with a loud bang and throws cold water at them.
All right, that sounds great. But we have row homes, so I know I'm going to soak my neighbor, which may or may not be a bad thing, but I don't know how feasible that's going to be.
Well,
is
then
it pretty accurate? I can point it, and it's going to stay in that zone?
Well, yeah, it depends on the layout of the row house. I mean, you know, turn it around completely, point it at your house, so if anything gets wet, it's you.
All right. Well, I never even seen those. Can you just get them at any of the big box stores or usually?
No, I keep urging our listeners to get out of the big box stores.
Yeah, I hate them. I agree with you.
You know, we got to get to the local neighborhood garden centers and hardware stores. These are family-owned businesses that have been around for generations, and they really need our support.
Absolutely. I agree 100%.
But if you can't find one at a local independent garden center, you know, you can go online. All of the normal suspects carry them. You know, search motion-activated sprinkler. You could also go to even a big box store or your local hardware store, and you can buy welded wire animal fencing and a pair of bolt cutters.
Yeah, I've thought about that, but I move them around here and there sometimes, so it might get a little difficult, but I might do that and make like a chicken wire fence around
it. No, not chicken wire. Welded wire. Chicken wire is too flimsy. I mean, squirrels could pull it out of the ground. They could probably chew through it. We're talking rabbit wire, turkey wire, welded wire animal fencing. It's very inexpensive.
Okay.
And, you know, if you're growing the big bell peppers, they need support anyway.
Okay.
So you make a little cage that will be just big enough for the pepper plant with some extra room, and then you make a little roof for it, and you put the roof on with twist ties. And then, you know, I don't want you moving your pepper plants in the middle of the summer. You're not talking about that, are you?
Sometimes I do, if I get them in the sun a little more here and there. I have them on wheels. Sometimes I can pull them around. So.
Okay, so you're talking in containers.
Yeah, containers.
Oh, okay. Well, then you build the little cage on top of your containers so that whenever you move the container around, the cage goes with it. Now you're even talking a smaller amount of protection.
Okay.
Otherwise, you're not going to win. Squirrels are evil. They're intelligent. They're acrobatic. You want to make sure these cages are really well fastened around your containers. But again, if you have a twist tie roof, you can just untie that, go in and get your peppers, and everything is safe.
All right, that sounds good. Yeah, they pretty much, I got a couple of the hot peppers I grew, the Tabasco peppers, and they destroyed most of them. I got like maybe 20, and that was about it.
Yeah, well, and some people will swear on hot pepper powder, but your evil squirrels have a taste for hot sauce, so.
Yeah, they're city squirrels, you know, they're a little tougher.
Oh, yeah, tree rats. All right, good luck, Lee.
All right, thanks for your help.
Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. LaMonda, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello. Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
You are.
Okay. All right, LaMonda. Where are you?
I am in Cherry Hill, New Jersey.
Oh, very good. Just across the bridge from Philadelphia?
Yes.
And what can we do for LaMonda in the Garden State?
So I purchased 2 azalea plants 3 years ago from my local home improvement store, and the first year they were great. The second year, we noticed that the leaves, they just didn't look green. They had spots of white on them, and, you know, maybe we just thought they needed to be fertilized, so my husband went ahead and fertilized them. The second year, they were almost all completely white, the leaves. This year was even worse, so I went online and I tried to find out what was going on with the azalea plants, and I saw tons of information about possibly root rot or lace bugs, and I was just ready to pull the azaleas out of the garden altogether and just kind of start fresh. So I was looking at the bottom of the leaf, and I noticed that there were some black specks on all the leaves. So I just wanted to know how to treat that and maybe what it was.
Where are they growing? Are they growing in flat ground or raised bed? Do you have them near a lawn? Are they getting sun? Are they mulched?
They are in our lawn, part of our landscaping, and they are surrounded by mulch, yes.
And it's wood mulch?
It is wood mulch, yes.
What color is it?
It's like the dark brown.
Oh, okay. So it's dyed wood mulch.
It is, yeah.
And is your lawn treated?
It is.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah,
we fertilize it, yeah.
So, well, fertilization is different than herbicides.
I don't think we use that, no. We, okay. We just fertilize it.
Okay. So the mulch is killing your azaleas.
Okay.
Azaleas want an acidic soil. They want good airflow around them. They don't want to be growing up out of a lawn. They need their own little area of open ground. Wood mulch is detrimental to them, to your home, to your other plants. It's just the only reason this wood mulch is so ubiquitous is landfills don't take it anymore. So it's foisted on homeowners. It was never a good idea horticulturally, and it breeds disease like mad on plants. So what you want to do is isolate at least the azaleas from the wood mulch. You want to get – have you seen these – sometimes they're little bales, sometimes they're big bales of peat moss at garden centers.
Yes, I have.
Yeah. Get a bale of peat moss, maybe move the azaleas to a spot where they get better morning sun and they're away from the lawn.
Okay.
Rake up any wood mulch and just throw that stuff out. If it's dyed, it's probably chipped up pallets from China. And then mulch the plants with an inch of peat moss, covered with an inch of compost, not composted manure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yard waste compost. And then pull off, you know, the worst looking leaves. When you
That's almost the entire plant.
Right. Yeah, you know, it might, you know, these poor things have been through Hades with you.
Yeah.
You know, it might be time to start over.
Okay.
And what you want to do is when you dig a hole, you want to fill that hole mostly up with peat moss to make it acidic. You want to mulch their soil with peat moss. You want to cover that with compost. You want to make sure there's good airflow between the plants, that there's no wood mulch anywhere near them,
mm-hmm.
and that you never wet the leaves when you water.
All right.
Now, if you do that, I think you'll have great success with azaleas. But azaleas and rhododendrons need an acidic soil, and, you know, they are greatly harmed by wood mulch.
Okay.
All right. Good
luck.
Thank
you so much, Mike.
And don't worry if you have to start over with new plants. Nobody, nobody gets gardening right the first time.
You got that right.
All right.
All right, Mike. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. A little ditty we're calling Bright Light at Night equals Caterpillar Delight. Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, please read us this week's enlightening question.
Sure, Mike. Colleen in the Fishtown neighborhood of Philadelphia writes, I have a question about the possible effects of having a street light above your garden. I've been gardening successfully for 5 years, but last year we moved to a new house and I've been having pest issues in my raised beds ever since. Last year I had swarms of aphids, hornworms, and cabbage lopers. It was a constant battle despite this being an entirely new garden, and the plagues greatly diminished our yields and even killed some plants. On a recent episode of You Bet Your Garden, you mentioned a pest that was attracted to nighttime light, and I wondered if that might be part of my problem. For some strange reason, there is a short city street lamp in my backyard. It goes on every evening like any other city street lamp. Is there any chance that this is part of our problem? What else would bring on so many sweeping plagues of pests? Thanks for all that you do. I learn new things every week.
Well, thank you, Colleen. And yes, there is a very high probability that your little street light is causing at least some and maybe all of your pest problems. Despite their common names, tomato hornworms and cabbage lopers are caterpillars whose adult forms are night-flying moths. Having a bright light right over top of their preferred food plants is like the giant neon displays at Pat's and Gino's in South Philly, luring grease-loving cheesesteak cravers through the darkened night.
So what can she do?
Well, I'm torn between two first choices. One is to try and get the city's ID numbers off the light, call the streets department, and ask them if they'll just turn it off. Or two, since she says that the light is on a short pole, maybe she could go up during the day and unscrew or remove the bulb, especially if this light is an annoyance that's shining in a lot of people's windows.
Yeah, but what if it's lighting up something like an alley for nighttime safety?
Well, then maybe take the bulb to a hardware store and see if they can fit it with a motion-activated sensor. Then it would come on when it was needed, but not be attracting every moth for miles around all night long.
Okay, but let's say the city says no, and or she can't get at the bulb.
Well, then she's got really good light to work on her plants at night.
Michael?
All right. You know, even if she does manage to shut the light, there's probably a leftover life cycle or two that are hanging around her abundant food sources. So she should get some floating row covers and the basic form of BT and a sprayer and be ready to do some caterpillar defense this season.
Right. She can grow crops like cabbage and broccoli under row covers all season long because they don't need to be pollinated. The covers let in sunlight and rain, but not moths looking to lay their eggs.
And row covers are great at improving plant growth, especially early in the season. Then I'd start spraying the uncovered plants once a week with BTK, the original strain of BT. Sold under brand names like Dipel and Greenstep, it kills caterpillars that chew on the sprayed leaves, but harms nothing else. It has no effect on birds, bees, toads, pets, people, ferrets.
Ferrets?
Hey, she's in Fishtown. You never know what those people are going to do. Anyway, spray the uncovered plants once a week, and you should be able to halt destructive caterpillars before they can do any damage.
Do any of these caterpillars become butterflies?
No. The tomato hornworm does turn into the sphinx moth, which is huge and beautiful. But it flies by night, and it's rarely seen. And its caterpillar form is massive and a massively big eater. A mere handful of hornworms can devour tomato plants to death. But I would not spray any carrots, parsley, or fennel in the garden. The very cool-looking caterpillars that feed on those plants do turn into beautiful swallowtail butterflies.
And the aphids?
You know, I seem to recall a study years ago that linked extended hours of lighting to increased aphid activity. But they're an easy pest to handle. Just spray them off the plants every morning with sharp streams of water from a hose or even the sprayer she's using to apply the BT. Studies have shown that sharp streams of water alone are devastating to aphids. She could also buy green lace wings, a beneficial insect whose common name is the aphid lion. They come shipped to you in the egg stage, ready to hatch into the little alligator-like larvae that love to eat aphids.
All right, anything else?
Yeah, a little bit off the track, but important. Fishtown is an old urban area whose soils have been exposed to lots of lead from house paint and car exhausts. So if she's using any of her original soil in those raised beds, I'd have it tested for lead. And always wear tight-fitting gloves when you're working in soil that neighborhood cats can easily access. Well, those sure were some great ideas about what to do when a bright light draws pests to your produce, now wasn't they? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to light up my lettuce if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. And please include your location in the email or we will indeed enroll you in the Spam of the Moment Club. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where nobody cares where you live. And where you will find the answers to all those questions you were going to email us about without your location, audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez-Zunas, executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Our internet illuminati, Rich Banowitz and Sarah the She-Devil Kazar, are always bright. As is our shining star, Alexis Landis, who produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Also shining brightly is our ephemeral intern, Mary Rhodes. Our editor, Al Banks, has never been mistaken for the little light that we all hope goes off when we close the refrigerator door. I'm your dim bulb, Mike McGrath. But hey, at least I'm not attracting any moths, right? And that's why I'll see you without a hole in my sweater next week. Oh, okay, so, well, I probably won't be wearing a sweater next week. At least I hope I won't be wearing a sweater next week. But summer did come at Christmas this year, and the coldest I've ever been was July in Eureka. So, well, anyway, there won't be any holes in them, okay? Your rhubarb is a family heirloom, but you're moving from a cold climb to Oklahoma, where it can't survive. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll offer some options for this seemingly impossible problem. Plus your fabulous phone calls.